Media Network.
Three, two,
and we're back.
And we are back.
It's Roast with KM Bell and Tom. They're your Roastmasters.
It is only when a mosquito lands upon your testicles that you realize there is always a way to solve problems without using violence. I disagree. Always is too hard a word for that, because I have in my life had problems that I have punched the shit out of, and it has made things better. I had a bully in the fourth grade named Chris. I punched him, and that problem solved itself because I talked to teachers, and I talked to principals, and I talked to parents, and nobody did nothing. So I beat the shit out of him, and it went away.
Well, I always teach my kids to stand up to bullies. So,
well, that was my dad's. My dad's advice was always never hit first. Never, you know, always hit last.
Your dad. That's actually good, because the last hit is going to be the one that takes him down.
Yep. He's like, yep. That's it. He's like, never ever instigate. Don't start fights. You know, but once somebody starts swinging on you, don't stop until you win.
You know what? I know you've got like a list of things, but that kind of brings me to a theme that I was thinking about. I think we may have already talked about this from time to time in the past.
Sure.
But I think America is actually going through or living in the house of abuse.
What? Why would you say that?
Why not?
Our mom is checked out. Our first lady mom has checked out and looks like she is seriously on a road.
She's checked out. She's checked right the fuck out.
Yeah.
And you are living in the house of abuse.
She is Xanax to the gills, man.
If you've been brought up in that kind of situation and you're aware of the terror and the fear and you know what people do, and I have seen and I have witnessed, I have worked in certain work conditions, working places where there were, it was led by somebody who was not running the place very well or very poorly, making poor decisions, and actually had some family members working with them that actually protected that individual. It actually reflects very much close to what's actually happening in the White House. There is no White House. There's just Trump and just whoever the fuck is able to do whatever they're going to do there. So as far as I'm concerned, I think that there is a great parallel between what is happening here, because if you have lived under the tyranny or fear of an abusive individual, you know what people do to convince themselves to stay in a situation like that.
Yeah.
or they leave, or they fight it, or whatever they really need to do. But when it is a power, when it is an authority figure, that becomes much more difficult, and especially if you're a child and you deal with that. That is very That is a life crisis. That's something that is not only scarring, but something that's going to be dealing with. Somebody is going to be dealing with that the rest of their life, no matter how that turns out. And I can't help but think of parallels to what's actually happening. But it's been in the back of my mind. I've been thinking about it from time to time for months and months. Because I can't help but think that this is exactly the situation we're in right now.
So, for the most part, it seems that the American electorate is the shaking, frightened child, hunched over with in a protective pose. Okay, I could see that. You know, and then the rest are the douchebag stepbrothers and sisters that are egging on the beating.
They're the ones that may be the abused spouse, that may be the other abused older family or whatever, that may excuse, or they may give permission or cover, or they may cover up, or they may be able to do whatever it is they do in order to keep from blowing up, from exploding, from creating, great risks. For instance, if you live in an alcoholic family, for instance,
sure,
that's a perfect example of that in that kind of abuse. The reason why I bring this up is because I'm beginning to see things from observers and people who are beginning to write about what is happening with greater alarm. And God damn it that we're actually fucking here to begin with. But there is an individual who, you know, who actually, who is an analyst. It's a person who is a former Department of, I think it says they're a Department of DHS government. Anyway, they've taught at Harvard. You know, they're fairly smart. Anytime I've seen this person on, they seem to have their shit fairly well together. And her name is Juliette Kayyem. Okay. So she actually had several thoughts today about what is happening. And she was on reliable sources. And she said, basic premise is we don't have to wait for a crisis anymore. We are in one. And the idea was, it was a little wonky. She goes, it's a little wonkish commentary on this point below that might give us some context. To date, a lot of critics of the White House often say, and they haven't even faced a crisis yet, as a warning about what we might expect from this chaos administration if something real were to happen. There's a difference between a routine emergency and a crisis. A routine emergency is an event that happens that is actually anticipated because the nature of the institution is like a five-alarm fire with a building. Or a bank, it's a bank robbery. Even a like DOS attack against the network. It's all anticipated. It is manageable.
That's why you call it routine.
That's routine, right. A crisis is different and generally defined as an event that contains substantial novelty, characteristics of the emergency that have not been previously encountered by the organization or people involved or the witnesses. A crisis tests the systems. Doing more of the same is not a solution. Therefore, ergo, it is a mistake to view a crisis as only a sudden event, like a boom, like a terror attack or a hurricane. There is the often more challenging idea of an emergent crisis or a slow roll crisis, and they are hard to recognize, but often only in hindsight. I can only think of like the hostage situation in Iran. You know how that kind of there was. Huge unsettling, and then all of a sudden all the Americans that were taken, and it just became this untenable situation for a really long time. So for instance, Ebola, the opioid epidemic, mass migration, unaccompanied minors from South and Latin America. These are crises that aren't sudden, but the crises nonetheless. And I say that not just because based on her experiences, because boom events are easier to rally the troops, but because we shouldn't be waiting for the boom moment to describe the political situation we are in. It's like waiting for the Mueller smoking gun, which may or may not happen.
May I interject just a small thought there?
Please.
If you to view this even in just the secondary context of like gun violence or even school shootings. It's the boom events have happened now for decades, and you know, so waiting for the boom event is always bad. And then when we get to things that are current in our current events, those boom events are dead kids. So
they are.
Yeah. So I'm with you on this. I like this so far.
So if the status quo, and this is also another departure here, if the status quo means we sacrifice your kids, because of whatever status quo ideas or whatever we put forth, okay, there has to become a literal come to reality moment when people wake up and realize that what they've invested in is literally the destruction of the things they hold the most.
Yeah.
Or maybe, okay. So she goes on and says, instead of wondering whether this administration can handle a sudden crisis, it seems obvious now.
Sorry. Who's wondering that?
Who wondered that? I don't. Whether self-inflicted or not, that is beside the point.
This administration could be counted on to punch itself in the nuts twice just to see whether or not the first one was a fluke.
We, instead of wondering if we're in a crisis, whether self-inflicted or not, that is besides the point. We are in one now. I don't say this to be alarmist, although I think last week was fairly worrisome. I say this because of the flurry of headlines, instead of viewing them as discrete and hard to distinguish, are actually the same single event. What is it?
Yeah.
Don't look at the flurry of what is actually happening. The single most takeaway is a governance system that is under stress from a crisis defined as a failure of leadership. If it helps, think of the White House more as a pandemic than a hurricane. I'm only partially kidding. But only yeah. I no longer wait for the boom moment. We're in a slow roll now. So this is we are reacting to a failure of leadership, a literal failure of leadership. And from this rolls out all of the other things that we're about to see. It isn't just the fact that the EPA is going to kill the clean water rule. It isn't the fact that the Florida legislature cannot find it incapable because they're in the payroll of the NRA to ban assault military weapons. The fact that those corrupt, horrible people like Ryan and McConnell cannot bring any kind of gun safety to the floor simply because they're within. This is the natural progression of where this status quo has gotten to and where we are right now. And it's up to us. We can continue to be delude ourselves into thinking that nothing will change, or we can make that change. And I can tell you the only thing is if you read Malcolm Gladwell's The Tipping Point, the reason things change, it's not because that things slowly change over time.
Right.
It's because things reach a painful, destructive point where people actually take action. That's when things happen.
Florida kids.
Florida kids. How intelligent, articulate, if you were shot at. You know, the thing about the Florida kids is too, Jeff, is the simple fact that there's the expression, if you better, when you shoot, you better kill the king, because the king's going to come. If you miss him, if you graze the king or queen, if you graze them, they are going to be pissed and they're going to come right at you. You're going to wish you're going to be dead because you missed. And the fact that
that's other cultures, that's got nothing to do with America.
In America, these are motivated, intelligent, passionate people who have every single right. They see the fact that their elders have failed them. Their government has failed them. Their system and structure has failed them, and they are taking action in its purest form. This is exactly what it needs to be done.
Yeah.
So, you got kids that are teenagers. I got kids that are teenagers. We had a fucking lockdown a week or two ago, and I'm holding it together simply because it was only because a kid was seen taking a gun with him on a bus, regular bus, not a school bus. And somebody just had the presence of mind to think, wait a minute, this doesn't look right. And they called the cops. They locked the place down. We're in this fucking zone right now where this is happening.
Yeah.
So you got teenagers. I got teenagers. We all know about this.
Well, I got the email the other day from the vice principal at my kid's school. My kids go to a STEM academy, which, by the way,
which for the audience, what is a STEM academy?
Science, technology, engineering, and mathematics.
Wonder.
So they do base STEM. Now, please keep in mind that both of my kids have artistic temperaments. Both of my school age kids. I have a third son. He's 23 and making babies already. So we pretend he's not doing that because that makes me a grandpa. So the kids, the youngest, they're both at the STEM Academy. Last year, Kyla was at a private school that flat fucking out. I can't afford. And there's no right now. And this isn't quitting, and I hope it's not, jaded realism or anything like that, but there's no escaping the fact that going to school, question mark, it's going to be fine. I've tried to put together the statistic of police officers killed every year in America versus kids that die from gun violence in America. And I haven't found the search term or the search phrase yet that's going to give me the information without more work than I have time or money for right now. But it seems that my kids went through the drill and it didn't faze them like it did 3 or 4 years ago, the first time they went through the drill in public school. It is route now, the way that we see. And I don't know about you, because we were kind of in the middle. Nuclear bomb drills, we did once a year until the third grade. And then we stopped. And that might just be that we're in fucking Utah. And so we do dipshit much longer than everybody else.
We just went into the hallway. We knew that this wasn't going to work.
Yeah. And that's the stack for better identification. and that was... A national entity might do a thing that is going to kill millions of people, and we'll know about it about a half an hour before everything hits. The thing with the school thing is they are sneaky up until the minute they start to shoot. You know, we don't catch very many of them, and the stats aren't available to tell me what's more dangerous, being a cop or being a kid in a school. Now, per capita, it's probably cop. But number-wise, it shouldn't be something I'm looking up. Now, we on the Left Show, on Monday's Left Show, talked for a bit about the weird fucking direction that Trump went with the NRA thing, and how I spend too many breaths telling Democrats to stop giving Republicans fucking medals and trophies and shit when they every once in a while do or say something that is not hateful or wrong. We have a state senator in Utah who's with a conversation with his kid turned 180 degrees on gay rights and marriage equality. Right. That doesn't change the fact that income inequality, minority support, fucking Medicaid, Medicare, food stamps, everything else, he's still just a Republican asshole about. But, you know, he said, I don't hate gay people anymore because my kid told me what a dick I was being and I finally got through to me. And they threw trophies at this guy at every fucking lefty function for 4 fucking years. He's still the same guy that is passing shit legislation. Now that he's out of the state Senate, you know, I get along with him just fine. He can be whatever asshole he wants to be. He's not making policy anymore. You know, now throw him trophies. But don't make these people darlings of the left, because the last time we saw Trump jump on and look like he was supporting a good cause was DACA, when he was complimentary to the Dems, when he did say things like, we need to take care of these kids. And then 2 days later, you know, that was fucking over and we're shutting down the government because, you know, everybody wants to these goddamn dirty immigrants, blah, blah, blah. That's what happened. If anybody, based on what we know so far, looks at him talking about the suspension of due process and that the other Republicans are terrified of the NRA, everything that he has done, everything that he has said, every example we have shows, when you include a couple things I'm going to tell you about in a second, that suspension of due process is right next to habeas corpus. And we're looking at a guy who is looking at China, who is getting rid of term limits that they've had. China has had term limits on their whatever they call him. Premier? I don't know.
Yeah.
President?
No, they call him president. I think they call him president.
Term limits. And this particular one is like, yeah, he's like, nah, let's get rid of those term limits on the presidency. And you got Chuckle Monkey, the human trans fat in the White House going, that sounds like a great idea. And you look at the things that he's willing to destroy with executive privilege or with the executive orders. And you look at the things that he and his are doing. What he's saying is not friendly Democrat shit. And any Democrat that gets excited about a suspension of due process to take away somebody's property, no matter what that property is, that's dangerous, because we are also over here fighting against police departments seizing money they find in cars and yep. not ever having to give it back because they seized it in what they thought was, even if that person's proved innocent. That's
asset forfeiture.
Yeah.
The entire idea of asset forfeiture. Exactly. Yeah.
That, if nothing else, is the most un-American thing I've ever heard, unless you're talking about the government. And when I'm talking about the government, I'm not talking about Dems, because they have been out of power too long. And even when they're in power, they are basically ineffectual. So you have a president that said, you're afraid of the NRA. I'm not. All he's doing is announcing in a way that Democrats have totally fucking misunderstood, and that Republicans are butthurt for the wrong reasons, is a guy that is warning everyone that it doesn't matter what you do or say, he's going to do what he wants to get where he wants to go. And nothing's going to get in his way. Not
precisely.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's, look, this is a long shot and it's a little paranoid, but if Mueller ends up dead by suspicious means, I will not be surprised. I hope it doesn't happen. Hope the guy lives forever. I do.
I don't think he'll get that. I think if it, if that, I think then we would be in some very serious, we would be in some very serious shit at that point. That would be an entirely.
But you think about it, the guy could have a fucking heart attack tomorrow and I'd be suspicious as shit, because.
Well, everything's suspicious as shit now. Well, everything is under suspicion.
Well, it seems like everybody that takes a public stance, you know, about Putin, that doesn't make him, you know, piss and giggle, ends up, you know, dead or attempted assassination.
That's them. And I hear what you're saying, and I understand. It's important. It's difficult to try to have some kind of balance with this level of chaos. I can only think it's just going to get worse. I think that it's important for people to literally find some means of Zen, some type of yoga, some kind of mastery.
I would like to, Tom.
I know.
No, but another state in the nation has decided that my Zen is a public health crisis. So Florida joined Utah in the, naked people are naughty. They're all never nudes. It's just so fucked up.
I hear you. What a way to get to the first break.
We get a break here? We're only 20 minutes in.
We could do that.
Okay, I'm fine with that. All right, I sent you something on Twitter so that we're going to do this in a good mood. So let's go to a break. We get back on the other side. I am going to try and liven this place up. Quit talking about my abusive federal parents. Hey folks, Jeff here.
And JC here.
Oh, and Taylor.
I want to talk to you about Patreon. Patreon is how, for the most part, we are paying the bills around here.
Come on, help us pay some bills.
It's important. These shows cost money to both make and distribute, and we don't ask for money very often. And what we're asking for here is you, as a listener, pitching in $5, $10 a month, you know, over the course of the year to help us grow and get bigger. We need it now. More than ever.
But look, you're not just throwing us money. We're going to give you something really unique for your money. Normally, everything you get from us is free. You get a free download of our podcast, The Left Show, the world's greatest podcast, comic book podcast, and of course,
the truck stop visits.
Yeah, the truck stop visits and Geek Therapist. And instead, we're going to give you exclusive content, stuff that we record separately that is then put out for only you to listen to.
Yeah, and I don't have dollar restrictions on that stuff. You pitch in $5 a month, you pitch in $25 a month, that's it. There are goals there if you do throw in a little bit extra. We send you presents as soon as I can find them.
Yeah.
And for those of you that are waiting for presents, I just need to find the boxes. Don't worry about it. But no, with Geek Therapist, the world's greatest comic book podcast, and of course this, The Left Show, and our exclusive content, You get more as a Patreon member of our family than you do anywhere else. So go to the website for your favorite of the Defend Media families, whether that be theleftshow.com, worldsgreatestpodcast.com, or geektherapist.com. Click on the Patreon button, become a part of the family, and start getting the cool shit nobody else is getting.
You know you want it. You know you do.
Just do it.
There are 10 jillion podcasts in this crazy world, but there is only one that serves a fresh pot of, hi, how do you do? I'm Tom, your host of the Coffee Cast. My mission is to make it as compelling a listen as you'll find it. I'll talk about all kinds of subjects. Sometimes I'll have guests. Good stories, because people listen to what interests them. And sometimes it's the Coffee Cast. So if you're listening as you're texting the seventh draft of a resignation message to that soon-to-be former psychopathic boss, gift shopping rotary phones for your great-great aunt, or skydiving for the first time without a parachute. Whoops. Welcome to the CoffeeCast. Remember, you can download a fresh CoffeeCast podcast anytime at Stitcher and iTunes, and now on demand on the Progressive Voices app and progressivevoices.com. So until the next pod gets brewed, I'll do my best to keep it fresh. The CoffeeCast podcast.
What do you miss when you miss The Left Show?
Huckabee, being a former pastor,
yeah,
and the biggest mouthpiece for the Christian right, has proven himself time and again to not be a Christian because he believes that Levitical law is absolute and was never removed by Christ.
Right.
So he's a rabbi,
yeah,
and therefore not Christian.
Yeah, yes. He's Rabbi Huckabee.
Why not? Then he gets to eat better deli food.
Oh. Haven't the Jews been through enough?
Yeah. Oh.
That was a good point. Good point.
I am pretty sure.
That
I know
one.
We got a little bit to go, but I am pretty sure Taylor just won the show.
Fresh episodes every Monday on iTunes, Stitcher, and theleftshow.com.
Okay.
So when you are scratching your back on a fence post, don't whip yourself in the nuts with a rope.
Well, we're going to include this in the podcast. We're definitely going to have this as a link so you can be able to, yes, to watch this. This is fine high humor, ladies and gentlemen.
Look, Shakespeare put shit in the plays for everybody, and
right.
I had an English teacher. You know what? I guess we're going to talk about more abusive relationships. I had an English teacher that didn't much care for me. Old woman. I can't remember her name, but we used to call her the Dragon Lady. And
but
she... What's that?
She's dead now.
Oh, very. Or if she's not, you know, then she's living somewhere else and the coffin's been moved, whatever. But
she only comes when there's not a full moon.
Yeah. This is no secret to anybody that listens from my direction, and I don't know if we've talked about it on yours, but I read exceptionally fast, and it's not speed reading, I'm not word skipping or anything. My mother believed I was damaged in the head. They had a word for that back then that we don't use anymore now. But she took me to a place that taught kids with severe learning disabilities how to do homework and read and do stuff like that at a normal kid speed. And I was advanced in reading, and I was reading stuff that I had to hide from my parents because they kept taking books away from me because they thought that I, you know, like in the second grade that my mom took dinosaur books away from me because she said, you can't read those words. And so I read the words to her and she says, you just memorized them from somewhere else, that kind of thing. So I read really, really fast. And this drove the teacher nuts because she would give us reading assignments in class, you know, and it's like, read 10 pages. Boom. That's 4 minutes for me, tops, if I'm fucking around. So okay. I'd do it, and then I'd get bored, and I'd put this thing down, and I'd pull out my own thing to read because I have had, up until a couple of years ago, it was a glitch. If I didn't have something to read, I got really twitchy. And I started to freak the fuck out. And then I took that goddamn Chantix to try and quit smoking. And that just fucked everything up. So we're doing the Shakespeare. right? And every once in a while, there's a little bit of low comedy, you know? And it makes me laugh because everybody laughs at a well-crafted fart joke. Everybody does, unless you're an asshole. No pun intended. And sometimes potty humor is fantastic, you know?
It is. Yes.
The first time, no pun intended, the first time you saw the campfire scene in Blazing Saddles was probably one of the hardest times you have ever laughed. Now, the fifth or sixth time, that joke is old, you know? And that's the one part of that movie that bugs me because I remember how much I loved it. And then I'm like, farts are only, they're funny in the moment. You listen to the same fart over and over again. It's not funny anymore. But yeah, and so she would do that. I'd laugh at those moments when things were being read or said, or we were watching some Shakespeare PBS thing. And, you know, it's, I appreciate the comedy on all the levels. I like the drama. I like the fact that there were things in there for folks that didn't understand what it meant to be, you know, the aristocracy. And then she would always just point out, and she's like, yep, he wrote those jokes for the ignorant, Jeff. Like, whatever, lady.
Wow.
Shakespeare's funny.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, when you're in a very elitist, you know, kind of Catholic school, and you know they're training the next, you know, generation of, you know, righteous Catholics during the huge social upheaval of the late 20th century, you're going to have a lot of real pompous, you know, assholes. And it fell to me and my friends to memorialize them in cartoon form. So that's probably why I don't have very much respect for authority figures. And I think it probably comes from like watching my parents manage things so spectacularly well. Of course, I have to give them some credit for trying to keep things together, you know, with 11 people in the house. But nevertheless, I think that's probably where I got a lot of my lack of respect for authority figures. And I think the thing that always got me about Republicans, if they weren't lockstep, I mean, Democrats fall in love and Republicans fall in line. And if we're going to go ideology, I find a lot of people just very much close off their mind and shamelessly just adore power and power of any kind. It's just gotten to the point where, what kind of flavor of power do you want? You used to have granddad power with Reagan, Saint Reagan. Now it's a complete authoritarian type of situation. So it's up to us. It's up to us to, whether or not we're going to choose to do something about this.
There was a guy playing the fascist trumpet on NPR the other day. I was trying to fix a car and just, you know, had NPR on for a while. And one of the things that we do as Americans better than everybody else is we taboo the wrong word. When somebody stomps like around,
like penis?
Well, no, penis is a silly word for a silly thing. So when somebody stomps around wearing a swastika and talking about killing people that aren't white, it's okay to call them a Nazi. You're not invoking the Hitler clause of somebody thinking that ketchup on a hot dog is bad, you know? When there's a guy in a swastika talking about genocide, that's a fucking Nazi. When the president of your country, hypothetically, happens to believe in a one party, one religion, you know, one state, and starts talking about how cool it would be and how America should really give that whole lifetime president thing a try, that is as awkward and weird as it is. That right there is that is fascism. That's the road to fascism. That's how it happens.
And Jeff, your president should not be making those comments. A president of the United States standing up, taking the oath, to defend the Constitution. That's the job. Your job is there to defend and protect the Constitution. Okay.
Yeah, but he doesn't know what those words mean. And so if you give an oath and you don't understand the words, are you still bound by that oath?
Well, he doesn't fucking understand what he just twittered 15 minutes ago. But I'm saying is generally presidents are pro-democracy. I mean, you will have different flavors of whatever they think that is, okay? But not outright authoritarianism, fascism.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's dangerous.
That's what it is, though. I mean, it's what we're headed toward, and it's what they preach and what they talk about. At no point do you see in history the German people going, oh, I guess we're fascist now. No, they didn't. They just jumped on the goddamn, you know, fucking bus and went along with everybody else. It was, as I have said before, and I piss people off for some reason when I say that, is why I don't use common sense as a barometer for good behavior. Because the common sense of the German people led to the Holocaust being allowed to happen. The common sense in Rwanda, you know, allowed the Tutsis and the other one to, I can't remember right now. My genocide's a little weak. You know, it was the common sense of Cambodia that let Pol Pot kill, you know, that many people. Common sense is mob mentality. And sometimes it's fine. Like people enjoying Black Panther. And sometimes it's fucked up, like people voting for Trump or thinking that anybody not white is inferior. My favorite thing that I saw on the internet over the last year was somebody put a picture of Steve Bannon next to a picture of Idris Elba. It said, the guy on the left thinks the guy on the right is genetically inferior. Now, that's not totally a fair thing, but you know what? Idris Elba, I don't see that many people being at all genetically superior to him, no matter what color he is. It's Idris Elba, for fuck's sake.
I don't see any. They actually have this thing. I mean, if you feel like you're superior to somebody else from whatever is coming out of your, what you're looking at, and the difference in somebody else's skin tone or their sex, you know, you need some serious time for some serious internal reflection, which these people don't have.
Yeah, I can think I'm better than people for reasons that I've worked on. You know, I am better than everybody at work at reaching things on top shelves. Why? I am genetically superior in the top shelf grabbing department because my genetics made me tall.
I can.
That's not like I'm better than you because
humbled, I'm humbled by other people who do it far, far better than me. But
you know, but again, that's the thing is I've talked about this before, is it's the two things in my life that show me a small bit of how it feels to be a minority and or a woman. And that is when I wear my kilt, no matter when I wear my kilt, women of all ages, size, descriptions, races, whatever, you know, will inevitably a couple of times in the day pull my skirt up, you know, to see whether or not I'm wearing underwear.
It's now, a magnet.
Well, sure. But, you know, if again, and I'm not trying to draw inequality to this, but if I did that to girls in skirts, right?
Oh, my God. No.
So you add to that when back in the 90s, when I was a beautiful ponytailed, sensitive lad, right? I went through Oklahoma and Texas down to a convention once, driving through. I got pulled over in Oklahoma and then got pulled over every 45 minutes all the way down to Braxton. And, you know, and they just fucking harass me and they tear the fucking car apart looking for drugs and this and that and the other. And it's just like, well, it's not that I do them or don't do them. It's that the drugs I would do, your dogs can't smell because I don't smoke pot. Makes me tired and gives me the munchies. And so, you know, nor would I drive to fucking Texas with dope. But the difference is I can put on pants and I got a haircut. And when I'm wearing pants, there's nobody trying to look at my pants. You know, and when I got a haircut, I am just a tall, simple, slightly chubby, you know, white guy. That's it.
Right.
These are things that I can fix as we move along in the world. I'd like to be able to wear my kilt more often. And I do always wear underbreeches with them because, you know, of that. Because nobody wants to see my pecker. They just don't.
And nobody wants to see that. No one.
No. No. So, I mean, that's just what it is. So,
except.
I mean, that's it. I'm with you to this, and I it's. I want to motivate kids to do stuff that's important, and the call for a return to civics in our schools, it's too fucking late. Yes, we still need to do it. That's not going to fix today's problem. And a call for civility in politics, it's too late. We still need to do it, but it's too late to solve today's problem. What I need is, and I think that I am proven out by how weak the lefties and progressives are right now, because we're too busy fighting with ourselves. And when we're not, we're too busy telling ourselves to look. You and I have talked about this before. George Lakoff fucked this party up. He screwed over
because he wrote it's "Don't Think of an Elephant." He actually devised. Think about the framing by which the Republicans are putting things in, and you're just following through.
Yeah.
And just talking there, you're using their words. You are being. Don't go there.
And guess what?
For instance, if you talk about entitlement programs like Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, it's not entitlement programs. They're investment programs because you invested, you put your money into it.
Right.
Throughout
and now,
your entire life.
And
you invested.
Tom, they said in two words what it took you 30 to say. And George Lakoff laid out the way for us to be sweet and polite and chatty and educational. We need to be down in the gutter throwing bumper stickers back. They can be honest. That can be the ground that we stand on. But Lakoff and a bunch of other fuckers, right? What in 2005, around 2004 election through 2008,
right?
They neutered us. And I don't mean that in a patriarchal way. I just don't have the modern equivalent for it. You know,
we won that election. How did they neuter us? How?
In 2004?
Well, 2004. I'm not talking to 2008.
Dude, Obama won on a fluke. I love the guy. Okay, and he won.
McCain picked Palin. Is that why?
Because McCain was really terrible and Palin was even worse, and they made themselves look like a comedy of errors. Guess what? We've had that shot. America is immune to slapstick bullshit now. Look at how many campaign managers Trump went through. And and Hillary aside, because we all know how I felt about her as a candidate. She's an awful candidate. Wonderful fucking public servant. Amazing. Smart as fuck. You know, I would love to be her friend. I would love for her to even just spend time to spit on me because I respect the shit out of her. But as a candidate, she was walking around with 30 fucking years of baggage on her shoulders. So
I know,
you look at the
nobody
fact,
to knock it off and just simply say, live for today.
Yeah.
This is our message for today. Keep it clean. Keep it simple. One, you can do this.
Sure. But nobody did it. And so I look at a guy like Trump, seriously, a guy who cannot speak better than a third grader. Okay, who has no message, who is hollow, who anybody, even Republicans up until he won, you know, were pretty wary of. And this guy systematically took out, 17 or 16 of some of the best and brightest that the Republicans had. And while we may not like them, they were smart people. You know, Jeb Bush is not a fucking idiot. He made himself pathetic by letting Trump get into his head, but this guy systematically dipshitted his way through from beginning to end in a way that made the McCain-Palin ticket look like the Algonquin Round Table. It looked like a fucking Mensa convention compared to what Trump was putting out in the world. America got that out of its system with Palin. And by the time Trump came around, everybody's like, oh, yeah, well, there, of course, everybody talks dipshit. That's just how it is. And the media getting pissed about it. That's just the media getting pissed about it. I mean, that's we build these immunity boosters. And what we've done is we have softened ourselves to the point that we don't fight effectively anymore. And a fight is what we need. We need bare knuckles, screaming, yelling, dropping fucking truth bombs and kicking the shit out of their insane, toxic negativity. I need to tell people that Social Security is not an entitlement plan in 3 to 4 words. and no more. It's your fucking money.
Your investment. It's yours. It's your money. What did Bush say when he was doing all those tax cuts in 2001, 2003? He goes, it's your money. You go, we no longer have a deficit. We're running a surplus. Let's get back the people their money. It's your money. It's your money. Three words. Three words. That's all it was. So there, I mean, yes, I'm the fewer words there are, and the smaller the word is,
the more
the
people
you can get it on the poster.
The more people can understand you. Yeah.
You know me. I mean, I deal with bare knuckle messaging.
Democrats need to stop being afraid of white space on the poster. That's it. That's it. Big font, five words. Go back and look at Ogilvie. Look at Ogilvie. Huge page of an ad, one picture of a car, and a couple paragraphs underneath. You look at Jim Jeffries did this perfectly last year, and this is what I'm terrified about. This is what people aren't looking at now. Jim Jeffries, and I'll send you a link to this if you haven't seen it yet. The Jim Jeffries show, he broke down Democratic messaging and why it's so fucking awful. You know, and talking about do you seriously, without Googling, name the slogan for the 2018 election cycle that the Democrats came up with around September.
Oh, I know what it is. Yeah, I know what it is, but I forgot it already.
It's three sentences.
Oh, fuck me.
MAGA. Easy. We are creative people. We are the liberal arts party, for fuck's sake. We can't come up with a bumper sticker that effectively pushes our message. You know, I have no problem with being intellectual. I happen to find it awesome. It's my favorite way to be. You know, but part of being intellectual is figuring out how to get the most information to the most people in the quickest, most economical form. And what that is the gutter fight that we have been losing since the fucking Ralph Reed and the Christian Coalition showed up late in the fucking Reagan Empire.
We can fucking do this because those guys have sold their soul. Why the and nevermore do you want to have somebody just say, this is like Toby from West Wing. Stop. Don't hurt me. Don't hit me. I'm over here in the corner. Just leave me alone. It's just, no, you're in it now. And if you don't care about your kids, if you don't care about your future, I don't want you a part of this because we need fighters. We need people who are just bare knuckled, double fisted. And speaking of such, this is a complete, here's the thing is because in school, if you did study advertising in school, and by the time you got to the revolution of Ogilvie and Birnbach,
yes,
the idea that, okay, the simple idea, it's ugly, but it gets you there. Like, especially in the Volkswagen campaigns, do you really need a huge page full of of imagery? And you know, there's like sales messages, call now, web address, all this other shit. When instead you could just have a simple image and simple headline and maybe a line or two, a copy, and then a brand. And then just, you know, we're having a conversation. We're friends.
Yeah.
You know, by the way, you know, there's a way to do this.
Web addresses are important and should be a fucking footnote.
Well, they're
you
fucking
don't
late.
Need you don't what need you don't need explodey graphics to get your point across,
right?
You just need your eye to look. It doesn't have to be the thrifty nickel.
there was a guy who actually came from the Ogilvie school, and he and a friend kind of put together like this is the way a really clean ad that Birnbach does. A Volkswagen, and it was just the bug in the corner didn't fill the page. Down below it said lemon, kind of described that because you know we found that there was something wrong with this thing. We're not going to sell it to you. That's the intent. That's the
true.
That's the full purpose of us doing our best job and selling you the best kind of car. Okay, it's a Volkswagen, all right, but that was like 50 years ago. So what he did is he and his buddy kind of put together, this is kind of what you would do if you didn't have that kind of vision. You know, first of all, you'd make it really big. Then you put 50 other cars in the same page. Then you'd use starbursts. Then you'd say sale now. Then you also have pictures of the salespeople in there.
Yep.
And it would just, you pollute the entire page until it looked like every other ad that's in the paper now. And that's why the other, that's why whatever they were doing at the time, that was different, stood out. That's why it was a revolution.
Yeah.
And if you get it down, distill it down, make it simple, get it right down to the very essence, you know, you can do this kind of thing and you can influence and you can change people and you can change their behavior.
Every time you make a bad looking marketing campaign, God kills a kitten.
And we don't know. Dude, we don't want dead kittens.
Politics is sales. You know, and sales does better with good props.
This is sales.
Yeah.
You're moving someone's hand an inch to the left. You're actually convincing, and the only thing you can do in advertising, one of the two things, is just put that, have people remember your name or your brand or how they felt when they saw your brand, so that when they see it again, and maybe it's time to purchase, or maybe it's time to vote, they'll go, I had a good experience with that. I kind of remember that. I kind of have a good feeling with that. I'm going to choose that. Everybody does it. And everyone's done it through time immemorial.
You know, but the problem that we have, other than our own weird, you know, Hillary Bernie schism, which I think we can get over if we just pull our heads out of our ass.
I'm not going to go down that road ever again. We're fucking done with that.
Yeah.
Okay. We're done. That's 2016.
But
let's get the fuck off that and just come on. Let's get going, guys.
But we still have the monies, you know, and the monies want what they want. And as long as the monies want what they want, revolution doesn't happen. Now,
or does it?
Well, it'll be a revolution towards people with money, and
it will be pitchforks, it will be torches, it will be destruction, it can get that way. I'm not promising it, I'm not advocating, I'm saying there are times and things when things get tipped over, and that happens. The money cannot control everything forever.
But it does. And it will until here. You know what? I had this discussion with somebody earlier today, and it was the party took a big fat check from a toxic waste disposal place here in the state, right? The lefty party, and to do a convention, you know, we got 10 grand, and four or five, you know, of the local agitators just freaked the fuck out, wrote a bunch of blog posts, made a bunch of asshole noises and all that, right? Turns out not a one of them had ever thrown a small dollar at the party at all, you know? And so that's what it comes down to, is it's like, you can't take the money from the corporate bigwigs. Great. We need small dollar donor base, you know, and you, screamer yeller, better than everybody else, you little asshole. You've never given a fucking penny. You don't show up for volunteer opportunities. You don't do the fucking work. And you're over there telling me, you know, the party needs a big fat kick in the ass, right? The problem is that over the last few years and during the Obama administration, because, you know, the Obama for America did a really good job at fucking running off everybody willing to throw a punch, running off everybody that wanted to fight to do it better, running off everybody that really liked the state party partnership, because they had a different plan. And their plan was the reelection of Barack Obama. And that was great. Right. And then the minute he got reelected, what needed to happen was a return to the thing that worked, that put us in the point where we could get him elected in the first fucking place. And instead, it turned into a, hey, let's find out how to talk nice to our neighbors that basically want to murder Mexicans and Muslims. Let's find a way to make sure that we don't alienate them. No, they need to be told why they're wrong in the shortest, quickest fucking way, with the smallest fucking words that'll get through to their ignorant little fucking heads, so that they understand that what they're doing is wrong. I want to beat the shit out of them with their Jesus. I don't want to nice talk them anymore. And that's why I get pissed at Lakoff, is he was all about being fucking polite. Start a conversation. Fuck no. I want to start a pie fight. And then I want to win that pie fight. Because I think that we have it in us, because like I said, we are the liberal arts party. You know, if Hollywood elites were really making any kind of change on the country, we would never have to worry about a douchebag like Donald Trump. But right, we're not, right, man. Hollywood right. elites, they're in scripted drama. And right now, the entire goddamn entertainment system is being run and dominated by unscripted reality shows. And that's where all the worst people are. And TV has always been something that we used since its inception until very recently as a thing to put our bright ideals on a pedestal. You go back to, what was the movie? It was Game Show? Ralph Fiennes? Yeah. Or Joseph Fiennes, one of them.
Right.
And you watch that, and I remember watching it at the time going, what the fuck's the big deal? He cheated on a game show. But when I was a little older and watched it again and was able to take a little bit of step in context to it, it was like, at that time, what they did was shocking to America. It shocked them, because we don't do that on television. Now the family of the girl who had sex with the rap guy, they're worth billions of dollars. Okay. I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't get how the exploitation of a white trash family and their little fat kid, because their mom is a terrible fucking person. I don't get that, how that gets, you know, five seasons.
I don't get that either. And it totally disgusts me. I just don't get it. However, what we could do to wrap all this up, and maybe just put a little bow on this possibility, wrap up all of this, is the fact that this information may be about an hour and a half old. Nevertheless, I just thought I would just kind of finish this out. There are nine names, okay? For whatever you want to say about Axios, it's like Politico, whatever, maybe worse.
Right.
However, this is news. They have reviewed a grand jury subpoena Mueller's team sent to a witness. They reviewed a grand jury subpoena, okay?
Yeah.
Mueller is apparently subpoenaing all communications this witness sent and received regarding the following people, okay? Maybe when I get to my show, I'll put music under this. The following people, this is communications. Bannon, Stone, Roger Stone, Rick Gates, Manafort, Cohen, Schiller. Schiller is his bodyguard. Okay?
Yeah, Hope, yeah, yeah.
Lewandowski, Page, okay? Carter Page. And last, Trump. Trump himself. Fuck. If he isn't going to go apeshit this week, I'm going to be actually surprised, because maybe they found some extra strong Xanax for him. Fucking hit the fan. I'm surprised Pence isn't on the list, but he's up to it in his neck. Anyway, up to his whitey tidy little neck. So that's the message, is get your message together. So, Jeff?
Yes, sir.
That is absolutely correct. You're right.
We didn't do anything happy except for talk about a bear hitting himself in the nuts. I had all this happiness to give to the world today. Lindsey Graham says war with North Korea would be worth it in the long run. Now, that sounds pretty bad, unless you say it the way that he said it, and it's like, war with North Korea would be worth it in the long run, don't you think? David Nunes will not stop whining about Stephen Colbert making fun of him. And he says that it's dangerous for the country that Stephen Colbert makes fun of him. Last, Anthony Scaramucci. Who got on television the other day and said, no, I can go into the White House anytime I want. Turns out, no, he can't. He is on the list of people that cannot come in without very special approval. I had happy shit today, man. And instead, we talked about the abusive relationship of America to the people who live in it. I guess I did too. Never mind.
Let's just say that maybe if you're feeling up to it later in the week, we can actually have a happy talk. Why not?
Yeah, we can do that.
We can do that. Yeah. Why not? This is good. This is therapeutic. This is fine. I think that there are things of great weight and import that we had to get off our chest. And it was important that, because it's called roast. And we have just done that.
We have roasted ourselves, other people, and a bear's nuts.
And with that.
Yeah.
All right, man.
Thanks, buddy.
I would generally let things run out a little bit more, but I'm going to need to make dinner. So that's what I'm going to do.
No, you're good. I need to pee. This is great timing.
It's cold here in the city. It always seems that way. And I've been thinking about you almost every day. Thinking about the good times, thinking about the rain, thinking about how bad it feels alone again. I'm sorry for the way things are in China. I'm sorry things ain't what they more than anything else. I'm sorry for myself, 'cause you're not here with me. Our friends all ask about you, and I say you're doing fine, and I expect to hear from you almost any time.